Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Friday, February 3rd, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
There are a lot of things to talk about. Someone was telling me today they were listening to Rush Limbaugh on the news, and he says, I was all prepared to do the program, and I'm ad-libbing, of course. This is, you know, what someone told me. He said, and he was going on about how he was so prepared for the program, but the news is changing so quickly that he has to throw out all his prepared stuff because it's all old news already.
Yeah,
and he says less than 24 hours. He says I have all my reports ready to go, and he says I have to change them because everything has changed already, and that's true. Because this morning I was thinking about listening about reports and looking up things. I was like, I've got the. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, that doesn't even apply anymore because it's changed. And we're here to keep you up to date. We'll take that load off your shoulders as far as keeping you updated on the financial news and some of the political news as well. So let's get right to gold and silver today. And let me pull it up here. Al and I were talking a few minutes prior to the program, and didn't have my gold prices up ready to go, but I am now up $330 for gold today, $12.1970. Silver, a little pressure, 2 cents. Nothing to sneeze about. $17.54 shouldn't keep you from buying silver. Platinum up $3 at $1,005. Palladium down 8 at $753. The USDX today down 0.03 at $99.79. Crude oil up 0.30 at $53.84. If I was a betting person, I'd be going long on crude oil. Crude oil is going to spike. Crude oil is going to be close to 100, I'd say, in the next. Well, maybe not 100 in the next 6 months, but it's going to be higher in 6 months than it is today. A much higher. And let's see what we say at the stock market, the paper prices today. Dow back up over 20,185 points, 20,070. The NASDAQ up 30 at 5,666. S&P up 16 at 22,97. 10-year yield up 0.02 at 2.49%. The euro is also higher, 0.15 at 108. European and Asia markets basically unchanged, flat overnight. And so we had the S&P nearly topping its record high. And, of course, it was all boosted by gains in the financial shares. As Donald Trump moved ahead with deregulation, in the financial markets, and the strong payroll reports. Let's start with that. U.S. employers added the most workers in 4 months, but you still had wage growth that slowed more than projected. January's 227,000 increase in payrolls followed the 157,000 rise in December. This is from the Labor Department. Jobless rate rose to 4.8%, and average hourly earnings grew 2.5% from January 2016, and this is the weakest since August. Russell Price, Ameriprise Financial out of Detroit, he says there's more slack in the labor market than the unemployment rate implies, but we're continuing to make progress in absorbing the slack. Blah, blah. That's what else would you expect someone from the Ameriprise Financial Company say? Construction. The January results was helped by construction. Let's see. 36,000 increase in construction payrolls was the largest since March. Revisions to the previous 2 months subtracted a total of 39,000 jobs from payrolls. November's gains was cut to 164,000 from 204, while December's change you know, rose by 1,000. So big drop in November's payroll numbers. The participation rate, which shows a share of working age people in the labor force, that increased to a 4-month high of 62.9% and has been hovering close to the lowest level in more than 3 decades. Government employment fell by 10,000, with state and local agencies subtracting 14,000 and federal payrolls adding 4,000. Factory payrolls rose by 5,000 after an 11,000 increase the previous month. Let's see if there's anything else interesting in that. Retail was up and so forth. I don't think you need to have the breakdown by each. Wage gains. The gain in average hourly earnings over the 12 months ended in January was less than the 2.7% median forecast. Overall wage gains were depressed by a 1% drop in pay in financial industries. The average work week for all workers was unchanged at 34.4%. Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary nominee, said that they should start using the U5 rate as an alternative indicator, and they probably should. And the U5 rate would show 5.8% in January from 5.7% in December, but it includes discouraged workers as well as a group called marginally attached workers who aren't working or actively looking for work but want a job. So the underemployment rate, which includes part-time workers who prefer a full-time position and people who want to work but have given up looking, rose to 9.4% from 9.2%. So that's the number they want to use instead of the, the U3 that they're using right now. Yes. Financial. He took a pen. We saw that the markets were already rejoicing on the dismantling of the Dodd-Frank reform of Wall Street. Trump signed an executive order today that sets this deregulation effort in motion. Some of the details of the order were not immediately available, but the action wasn't expected to make immediate changes to financial regulations. Trump said that today we are signing core principles for regulating the United States financial system. He says he wants to roll back Dodd-Frank to free up banks to lend to American businesses. Of course, this order came after he met with a team of all-star CEOs on his advisory council, and that included Jamie Dimon. He's good buddies with Jamie Dimon. He says, there's nobody better to tell me about Dodd-Frank than Jamie. Yeah, because Jamie had to pay a few fines because he went against the old Dodd-Frank and did a little bit of gambling there, in which he shouldn't have, got caught and has little fingers smacked. But Gary Cohen, another former Goldman Sachs president, said he served as the face of the administration's Dodd-Frank efforts today. Until they really release everything that's going on, but we pretty much know the areas that they want to really attack, if not all of it. And I didn't know if you had anything to say on that today, Al.
No, I have no comment, Melody. I've decided to become a politician or perhaps a CEO, and when these kind of subjects come up, no comment.
Well, some of the Dodd-Frank could be adjusted by Trump through executive orders. Others would require Congress. A bill sponsored by Republicans called the Financial Choice Act would eliminate the Volcker Rule, which bans banks from making risky bets with their own money, and also the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is a watchdog that is actually had gone after the big banks like Wells Fargo. What's interesting is Mnuchin, his Treasury Secretary, says that he thinks that it's worthwhile to keep the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but he thinks it should be funded by Congress, not the Federal Reserve. So it would hurt their independence a little bit,
The Federal Reserve's independence?
No, this agency is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Okay.
It's funded now by the Federal Reserve. Mnuchin thinks it should be funded by Congress, which would eliminate some of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's independence.
I think we should make the Mexicans pay for it right along with the wall.
Well, I think these are really big deals. And, you know, whether you agree with Obama and so forth or whatnot, some of these regulations did go into, you know, because these big banks, the too big to fail banks, you know, they got away with murder. They put a lot of people at risk.
Well, I understand.
A lot of people lost money.
They need to be regulated.
They need to be regulated.
They need to be regulated because any notion that you can trust people that have billions of dollars is just absurd. You don't get that kind of money by being a Boy Scout. You know, there's an old saying at the foundation of every great fortune, there's a great crime. And I'm inclined to believe that's true in most instances. There may be exceptions, but I'd bet you that 90% of the time, you follow the money trail and you're going to find some dead bodies, or figuratively speaking, you're going to find dead bodies. I don't know what you're going to find exactly. You don't come to that kind of money just because you're brilliant,
you worked hard
and the rest of that. These people need to be regulated, and when they say, oh, we're bankers, you can trust us. Are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? Trust bankers. You got to be nuts. And insofar as if Trump is going to deregulate banking, it's just going to make for trouble. All right? These people are not to be trusted. They're going to push us into another Lehman moment. Watch and see. They're going to do something. They've got some clever idea, some genius where we could do this and we could rob, we could steal an extra $100 million or whatever. It's going to blow up in their faces, and we will rue the day that we deregulated banking.
But also, by deregulating the banks at this point in time, it's going to give a boost to the economy. And everybody's going to think, hey, yeah, you know, now these guys are doing the same type of trading as that what got us into the problem in 2008. Although, 2008 was just a symptom of the original problem. And, I mean, they've just, you know, every recession we've had, we never came out of any of the recessions. The recessions were cured by debt. And that just kept growing and growing and growing. So we never really came out of any of the recessions. It just gave us the illusion. The government is great at creating illusions. And so, again, you know, but yeah, it'll seem like, you know, it'll seem like all these things are perfect. And it'll seem like this new administration is doing wonders. And in the meantime, you know, let's keep a watch on derivatives. Let's keep a watch on, you know, some of these other things that'll continue to grow and get out of hand. And if the economy allows us to get that far. You know, when you hear about, you know, the lines being drawn, and I don't know, does Iran have sand? I don't know. But, you know, when you hear the things that are, the heat that is being increased on new sanctions on Iran over their missile test, and Navy destroyers sent to patrol to, you know, tensions. And, you know, it kind of makes you wonder which is going to come first, war or the collapse, or one will create the other.
There are people who believe, and we may get to it today, there's one article we have to talk about where Ernest Hemingway was quoted. He was saying, government has two ways of getting out of recession and or depression. I'm paraphrasing here. One is inflation, and the other one is war. You know, if you're in a financial bind, we have just the solution for you, and it's either inflation, which will make your savings worth less, and your retirement will be more impoverished, or if you don't like inflation, we could give you war, which might get you killed. So, what are we going to do here, Melody? Inflation or war? Or do you think Hemingway knew what he was talking about?
Well, I think we already have inflation, and I mean, certainly not to the degree that a lot of people expect and so forth. But if we remember, we talked about those four cycles yesterday, and if you follow along those four cycles of 80 years, and war is programmed, we're there. So you would have to say war. And I don't think war really gets us out of bad times. I just think, you know, it generates some sort of, but usually
apparent economic stimulus, but it's based
when
on debt.
Governments go to war, it goes it goes deeper in debt.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think if I had to choose one or the other, it would be inflation. But then they're both temporary until you actually have a collapse and you have a fixing of the system.
And how will we fix it?
You tell us.
And when I don't know. I mean, it's not going to be this. I am unable to imagine how they're going to solve the problems they have in a way that is reasonable and intelligent and painless. So, well, all we have to do is we just have to adjust the unemployment rate or the inflation rate, and then presto changeo, everything will be working just fine. No, we won't. This thing is fundamentally flawed. It's like having an automobile that no longer has a distributor on it. You're going down the hill, but there's no distributor. Guess what? It's not going to be solved by hitting the gas or hitting the brake. There's a problem here, and it's going to be a pain. It's not going to be easily. Won't be resolved easily or painlessly, and I don't see how anyone can get around it, although they've been able to postpone it for a number of years, and hard to say how long they can put off what strikes me as inevitable.
I think one way they've been able to extend our problem, and again, it's not a complaint of this administration, but there was at least a consistency. There was a quiet. You just didn't go against the stream of things, I guess. Now you have an administration that's just shaking things up, and I agree with a lot of the items that have been addressed already. I mean, I'm in agreement with them, but with that is and comes instability. And so
it's hard to I mean, everyone can I am encouraged by seeing Donald Trump in the White House. I am encouraged, you know, despite what I know to be true, what I believe to be true about the fundamentals in this economy. You look at the fundamentals and there is no reason to be encouraged. You look at Donald Trump and the reaction he's getting out of much of the country, there is reason to be encouraged. Now, how do we weigh that and make an accurate prediction of what's coming? We'll talk more in a moment. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
This will be over soon.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188.
You know, we talked yesterday about this administration, all eyes are focused, and it's like entertainment, and it really is. I mean, that's almost what's being presented as entertainment. It's just not people that are interested in the changes and in the policy changes and how it's going to affect them and so forth. I think people are watching. I mean, it is, and it's coming from the administration as entertainment to some degree. And it's just like...
Well, this is what happens when you do TV programs. See, these people are interested in ratings.
Well, they should do radio then.
They're ratings. That's what they're doing, and that's how they know whether they're doing a good job or not. Are people watching the Donald Trump show? And if they are, well, then, you know, if it's working, great. And if it's not, then we have to fire somebody. But it's, I don't know. I have no complaint about Trump. I am concerned at times. It looks, I don't see how he can sustain the level of activity that we've seen in the first 2 weeks of this administration. He's got something new a couple of times a day. And on the one hand, it's refreshing, it's exhilarating, it's yay, hooray, they're actually doing something. They're trying to do something, at least. On the other hand, how long can this be sustained? I'm not sure.
I'm not even so sure that there's so much new change. It's just that there's so many people that are talking and are involved. It gives you the illusion that all this stuff is, you know, it's so chaotic and everything. I mean, you have how many people in that administration, advisors and so forth, you know, the talking heads that are on all the programs and making statements to the media in addition to Trump and so forth. So it really seems like there's a lot going on, but you strip away all the conversation and you look at exactly what is being done. I mean, a lot of those executive orders, just like, I believe, just like Obamacare, it's like, no, I'm not sure it was Obamacare. It was in one of the executive orders where it was just, this will give you, you know, this executive order is, you know, to find out what we have to do this and this and that. And, you know, you have all these demonstrations across the country, but I don't think anybody, I saw it once in the news, anybody talk about the people up in North Dakota, they were arrested. They were having peaceful demonstrations on private property, and they get arrested. The people in Berkeley, you know, they break things.
This is just a holdover from the old cowboys and Indians.
Is that what it is?
That's what it was. We routinely arrest the Indians.
Well, but the point is, you know, they get arrested. They were peaceful demonstrators. They were in private property, you know. But yet, for the pipeline, you know, let's get them moved and let's get that pipeline built. So, you know what? I don't know. It's
Yeah, we'll watch and see. I mean, it's exciting, it's exhilarating, but we will see if we live to regret it. You know, I have lived to regret George W. Bush. I thought he was a good thing when he ran for office.
I didn't vote for any of them.
I was glad to see Obama get elected. I thought that was going to be interesting. So it just goes to show I've been disappointed. The last 16 years of presidents have disappointed me considerably. And in fact, you can throw in Clinton. He disappointed me. And George Bush Sr., I didn't get anything out of that. Last time I had a president that I thought anything of was Ronald Reagan. And that may be only because I didn't really know what was going on. So there is a persistence. It's like Christmas. You know, I'm still waiting for that pony that I was looking for back when I was 5 years old, and it still hasn't come in on Christmas. So I'm kind of used to being disappointed around Christmas because I don't get the pony, even though I look forward to it. Yay, Christmas. Something like that has happened persistently with presidents, and I hope it doesn't happen with Trump, but if it does, I will not be surprised. I won't be shocked. I'll say, well, you know, what do you expect? So we'll see.
And I do have to make a mention. In fact, I got an email. Mnuchin isn't Treasury Secretary yet, and that is true. His nomination was sent to the full Senate, but, you know, but he still is acting in capacity as though he is.
Well, it's okay with me. I don't even know. Secretary of the Treasury, what do they do?
You know, what do any of them do?
Well, it's an interesting point, though. You know, I mean, the Federal Reserve, which is a private entity, basically handles our currency. And I wonder, what does the Secretary of Treasury really do? Keep an eye on our supply of gold to make sure that we have all the bars that we claim to have? Does he do that? I know that he's in charge of running the printing presses, so far as I can understand. I believe that's correct. But all they do is print the currency and they sell it to the Federal Reserve at cost. Then the Federal Reserve lends it back to the government at, you know, at face value. It's well, what does the Secretary of Treasury do? Is that like being the vice president?
No, they're basically an economic advisor to the president. I mean, they certainly have some, you know, critical roles and, you know, trying to, you know, they address the, you know, fiscal policies of the government. Actually, the Secretary of the Treasury is fifth in the United States presidential line of succession. So, I don't know what their day-to-day, I can't give you every little duty there, so forth, but they do sign the notes. They do sign the Federal Reserve notes. Their name is on them.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Does he sign every one of them? Are they all, he sign them all, Melody, one by one as they come off the press? Does he sit there? Maybe that would be a full-time job, probably, signing all of those individual notes. But he doesn't do that, huh?
But you know what's interesting is they used to have a lot of departments that were assigned to the Treasury. You know, like I think the Homeland Security was. I don't think they are anymore for many years, but you know, they've all been reassigned. But
well, a U.S. Treasury,
because the government grows, you got to have all these different departments.
I think the U.S. Treasury made perfect sense when we had a gold and silver based currency. They had something to do then. But right now, I get the impression they are something like a figurehead. I know they go around and I assume that they're in charge of enforcing counterfeiting laws, and there's some investigations to be run and the rest of that sort of thing. But once
we
got off that gold and silver, I think they began to do, where's their relevance?
They're supposed to manage the public debt. They've done a good job there, haven't they?
Yeah, right. If they mean maintain the public debt, well, yeah, that's pretty good. But have they even told us what the true size of the public debt is? I mean, how do we manage the debt when we don't even know for an absolute fact what are the dimensions of the debt? Is it only $20 trillion, as they allege? $100 trillion, as John Williams alleges? $200 trillion, as Congressional Budget Office and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff alleges? What is the true size of the debt? We should know that. You know, that's something we should be able to get straight numbers out of the government. There shouldn't be, you know, and I don't know, maybe the $20 trillion is the legitimate number. I don't believe it myself. I'm more inclined to believe John Williams and or the Congressional Budget Office and Lawrence Kotlikoff. I'm inclined to believe the debt is largely concealed. The real dimension of the debt, including unfunded liabilities, is largely concealed from the American people. But we ought to be able to get that number. You know, how can we decide who we want to elect and who do we want to reelect when we don't even know the dimension of the national debt? That would make a difference. If I knew what the true size of the national debt was, it would be easier for me to decide who I might want to vote for and who I would definitely be voting against. Who do we hold accountable? And what's going to happen if it turns out that Williams is correct, for example, and the true size of the national debt is 5 times greater than is being officially reported? Who's going to take the heat for that? This isn't like saying a rounding error. We may, we alleged the debt was $20.50 trillion and that it was actually $20.75 trillion. No, we're talking about potentially the debt could be anywhere from 5 to 10 times greater than is being officially claimed by the government. And this is a little bit, this reminds me of the allegations that the military, the Pentagon, has somehow misplaced $9 trillion. Whether it's true or false, I don't know. But the numbers are so enormous and nobody seems to pay any attention. We don't need to know that. There's nothing to pay attention to here, folks. Just move along, nothing to see. Wait a second. Maybe $9 trillion has disappeared. Who got it? It didn't just disappear. It's in somebody's bank account. Or maybe 100 people's bank accounts. I don't know where it went, but someone should care about that and someone should be doing something about it. And so far as I can see, it should be doing something if only to verify that, no, there's not $9 trillion missing. But so far as I know, no one's doing anything. It's no big deal. It's only half a year's gross national product, gross domestic product for half a year, $9 trillion thereabouts. Disappears at this. These things happen, Melody, you know. But if we catch you cheating on your income tax, Melody, I mean, what happened to the Queen of Mean?
I can't think
of her name. Who was it? She ran all the hotels.
She ran the hotel.
Yeah. I can't think of her name right now. Queen of Mean, they called her
Beasley?
That.
Beasley? No, not Beasley.
No. Leona Helmsley.
Well, that was close.
Yeah. If I understand correctly, she was paying millions of dollars in taxes, but they put her in jail over a $50,000 discrepancy. And the Pentagon has allegedly lost $9 trillion. And maybe the national debt is $20 trillion, or maybe it's $100 trillion, or maybe it's $200 trillion. We ought to be able to get... I mean, Helmsley, she has to look at this and just shake her head and say, my God, this is just insane. They jailed her for 50 grand and the Pentagon is short $9 trillion, or at least alleged to be. Why can't we get honest numbers? Huh? And I guess the reason is that it's
important to maintain
public confidence, and the only way to maintain public confidence in this Ponzi scheme they have running is you got to lie. But for the good of the people, government has determined it's going to lie to us. And I'm just sitting back and saying it might be good for now, but we're going to pay a price for all those lies. And somewhere along the line, this is an attitude that we have to embrace. We have to sit back and recognize that we can't just lie about these things and somehow it's all going to work out. It should be against the law to lie about these numbers. It should be against the law to manipulate these numbers. Someone should pay. Not a fine. Jail time. 5 years, 10 years, whatever. But there's got to be accountability if we're just going to sit back and laugh at the lies. I am unable to see that things will work out. And maybe that's just me and my age and my, you know, the generation I come from. There's people that seem to just laugh. Who cares about the size of the debt? We just laugh at that, you know. No big thing. Doesn't count for anything. Just an illusion. The debt's an illusion. The derivatives are illusion. Profit margins are illusions, all illusions. It doesn't matter. As long as we have faith in the illusions, we can get by.
Well, Al, you said it.
I don't think it's true.
I mean, to get honest numbers, you have to have honest government, honest people. There's no more accountability in anything. You can do anything you want. Remember when it all said, if it feels good, do it.
Yeah,
there's no, you know, people. murder people, take their lives. Mm-hmm. They get out in 2 years. I mean, it's, you know, there's no right and wrong anymore.
Yeah, there's a problem.
You know, there's justifications for lying. There's justifications for everything that is done wrong. Well, you know, it was, you know, this is why.
It's just accepted. Okay. It's just accepted. And that's perhaps the most dangerous part of it. We have a loss of morality. We don't expect, I don't know, I don't expect an honest president. After Bush and Junior, Senior, Clinton, Barack...
It's
I don't expect an honest president. That's wrong for
it's
me, I
everything.
Guess.
It's everything.
I know, but it's just
country.
One example. It's just one illustration. We have,
you know, people say,
somehow
oh, well,
we have to regain that expectation.
Oh, it's okay for little white lies. No, it isn't. A lie is a lie. You can't justify a little white lie as being okay. It is what it is. It is black and white. And a lot of people don't think it's black and white. A lot of people think, oh, no, there's gray. No, it's less, you know, no. It should be black or it should be white. That's it. I mean, and as soon as you start adding gray, well, then you start, you know, things
whole thing becomes confused. As difficult
confusing.
As it is to deal with black and white, and it's hard, harsh, very difficult. The truth of the matter is there is some gray in there. There's some gray in all of it. But when you accept the gray. And you say, well, that's fine. We don't need black and white. We'll just get a fight with the gray. It's trouble, trouble, trouble. Here's an article from the Cheat Sheet, and it's the headline is, how much money does the average American have in their bank account? And the answer is $4,436, at least according to a firm called Moab's Services. This is the amount that averages. It's the average in all the Americans' bank account. It includes Bill Gates, for example. It includes the billionaires. So on average, we have $4,436 in our bank account, and this is a big improvement as compared to 2007, just prior to the Great Recession. At that point, the average American had only $788 in their checking account, and that included Bill Gates and everyone else. Which indicates, as a nation, we are saving more than we did 9 years or 10 years ago. All right.
Are we
10 years
saving?
Ago, we had $788 average in the bank account. Today, we have $4,400 in the bank account.
Another way to look at it, Al, are the people like the Bill Gates are making more and more money.
Oh, yeah.
That has
oh,
distorted
yeah.
the figure. It's like the people like the normal people of the country. No, they probably stayed
62% of Americans
but
have less than $1,000 in savings. 21% don't have any savings.
It's just how
they're
much
in trouble. We'll talk more
yeah.
about this when we return in a moment. A couple of commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we were talking about an article from Cheat Sheet, right? And how much money does the average American have in their bank account? And on average, it's $4,436, according to one report. But that includes how much money Bill Gates has in the bank account and the billionaires and so on. And when you get it, they compare it to the 2007. Or on average, including Bill Gates and billionaires, we had only $788, and that was just before the onset of what came to be called the Great Recession. So we're in better shape in theory. We're in better shape than we were in 2007 as a nation. But again, according to the survey, 62% of Americans have less. In fact, the average is $4,400, but 62% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. About 21% don't even have a savings account. A report from the Federal Reserve in 2013, that would be 4 years old now, or 3.5 years thereabouts, 4,000 people were surveyed, and at that point, 31% of respondents reported having no retirement savings or pension, including 19% of those aged 55 to 64, and 25% didn't know how they will pay their expenses in retirement. I mean, I find that scary. I find that scary, and I know there's a fifth of the people in this country, 25%, quarter percent of the people, apparently from 55 to 64, have no idea how they'll pay their expenses in retirement. I mean, this is evidence of a kind of collapse that's coming. What's going to happen when these people can't pay their bills? What are you going to do? I mean, this is a terrible, terrible, frightening number to my. And they close in this article saying, for a lot of people, this means one thing. They're one or two missed paychecks away from being in a lot of trouble. And it's big trouble. You know, I can remember when I was a kid, it was never a problem. Get a job, wasn't a problem. I mean, you know, might take you a week or two to get a job, but you could always get a job. That wasn't a problem. It is a problem today. And if you have a job, the threat of losing that job has to be, you know, cause of a certain amount of anxiety. And if you do lose the job, what then? You're not just going to walk down the street and get another job. It's not going to work that way. And without savings to back up the majority of the people in this country, and I mean significant savings. I don't even care about $4,400. You got $4,400, that's your savings? You are in peril. You are in, you know, it. Two, 3 months out of unemployed and you're flat broke. Then what? It does not bode well. This is the kind of number you look at it and you say, oh my gosh, how did we get into circumstances like this? How did we become so vulnerable? And we certainly are. Bad things happen in the economy. There's going to be big, big trouble. And it's not just inconvenience. It will be real pain, real trauma. So, Melody, do you have more than $4,400 in your bank account?
I will never tell.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think you would.
I wouldn't make an announcement on the program. But folks, for those of you who want to protect your retirement accounts and so forth, don't forget, if you don't want to take it out of your IRA, we do have gold and silver IRAs. And so many of these places, these you hear them on TV and so forth, they slap you in these 1.5 ounce silver coins and rounds and commemoratives and so forth. I mean, they just take you. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how big they take you. And it all sounds fine and dandy, and everybody thinks, oh, I'm dealing with someone that's a big company. Ooh, 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 they'll protect me. No, they won't. Sometimes the bigger they are, the worse they are. So be careful. But here at Discount Gold and Silver, we don't. I recommend the same items that I recommend to my clients who take physical delivery of their gold and silver. You want to, because eventually I would like to think that you will take delivery of those items that are sitting in your IRA in where the metals are stored at the depository. So you do have choices. You do have options. As you get older and you begin to take your distributions and so forth. So give us a call at 800-375-4188. You can put gold eagles in there, silver eagles, Canadian maple leaves. You don't have to get all fancy. A lot of dealers like to push proofs. And they're only benefiting themselves, people. What you, and particularly with an IRA, what you want for your IRA is to get as much gold and silver as possible for your money. I mean, that's... So again, stay away from all this stuff that they're pitching and telling you, oh, it's from Canada, and you'll be protected because of confiscation and all this garbage. It's just amazing, all the garbage that's being delivered to the people from gold dealers and newsletter writers and so forth. So, but anyway, we do have the IRA available for you. You just give us a call. And I've been dealing with this country. They were one of the first ones, if not the first one, to offer the precious metals IRA, Gold Star. And so give us a call.
Got an article from Ms. Shedlock's Global Economic Trend Analysis. And the headline is, Germany a currency manipulator. China? Arguably, yes, under Bill Obama signed. Full-blown currency war on deck. All right. They want to call China a currency manipulator. Trump has called Germany a currency manipulator. But what does the term mean? And that's the point of this article. And it is an interesting question because how do they define China as a currency manipulator? And Germany is a currency manipulator, and God knows who else are currency manipulators without also defining the U.S. government as a currency manipulator. Because we can't very well criticize other countries for manipulating currency if we are doing the same thing. And insofar as the Federal Reserve is controlling interest rates and controlling the currency supply, they are currency manipulators, technically. But there is now a definition from based on the Trade Facilitation and Trade Enforcement Act signed by Obama in 2015. There's a definition for currency manipulators. And the article I'm reading from, Euro Intelligence explains via email, a currency manipulator is not what you think it is. And it's true. And it's all done with definitions. It's done in the same way that the government gives us a false evidence of what is the inflation rate, what's the unemployment rate. They give us false economic numbers. They give us bizarre definitions besides. And they have this 2015 law. Technical terms have precise meanings that don't necessarily agree with ordinary language meanings of the words, and meaning what they're saying here is they can define words in ways that are contrary to our normal experience, and it becomes legal. All right, and they get it. Then they went ahead, and under the 2015 Act, it required the U.S. Treasury to draft criteria defining a country as a currency manipulator. I've written an article on definitions back, 6 months or a year ago, I don't remember clearly, but the article was entitled, Definitions Are the Law of the Law. Huh? And the reason I say that is because virtually every word you deal with has multiple definitions. Get a dictionary. Open it up. See how many words you can find on any given page that have a single definition. There are such words, but they are few and far between. Most words have multiple definitions. Might mean this, might mean this, might mean this. And the point is, if you're going to read a law like thou shalt not kill, right? Well, what does that law mean? Well, it depends on what the meaning of each of the words in the law is. And there are multiple possible meanings for each of those words. And the point is that if you don't know the definition of the word that's being used, you don't know what the law says. And the definitions are the law of the law. They write a law. Okay, fine. It seems like you might know what the law means, but you have to know the definitions. They are the words that actually, and definitions, the point I'm trying to illustrate here, is that definitions are crucial, crucial. This isn't just a matter of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. This definitions, it's big and important. And if you read the United States Code, for example, you go into Title 26, which deals with the income tax, or any other part of the code, there are multiple sections on definitions, and the definition in one section for a particular word may be different from the definition for that word as used in another section of the very same title of the United States Code. There are something like 95 definitions of the term United States in the United States Code. And out of those 95, there are half a dozen or 10 that are different. All right, the balance of them, they define the United States under definition A at one point, and A under definition B at another point, and definition A at another at a third point. And the definition, they, not all of these definitions, all 95, are different. But there are 95 definitions for the term United States, and you would suppose that they would just have, look, United States means, and it means that at every, here's the definition for the term United States, and this is what it means every time you see it in the United States Code. But that's not true. The United States has multiple definitions, and depending on which one you are in, which United States are you part of right now? It sounds like a crazy question, but if you can answer that question, if you are in one United States, you might be subject to paying income tax. If you're in another United States, maybe not. Depends on where you are. Depends on what definitions you're using. And the only point I'm trying to illustrate is this business about definitions is profound. It's important. So here's what they did in part. The criteria developed by the United States Treasury under Barack Obama that over the previous 12 months, the country that they're talking about, maybe we're going to call Germany a currency manipulator, in the last 12 months, that country has to be a major trading partner of the United States. All right? Well, one of the great things about that definition is that a major trading partner of the United States can't be the United States. We are, by virtue of the definition, we are exempting it. Well, we can't be a currency manipulator because we are not a major trading partner of the United States because we are the United States. Here's the second one. Runs a significant trade surplus with the United States. Again, if a currency manipulator must be a nation that runs a significant trade deficit surplus with the United States, the United States can't run a trade surplus with itself, and therefore the U.S. can't be labeled as a currency manipulator. Well, there are repeated instances. It runs a material global account surplus, meaning more than 3% of the country's GDP. Again, this exempts the United States. And it's just interesting to me to see how they contrived to put this together to say, oh, there, currency manipulator. Over there, currency manipulator. And they're going to point that finger, and by virtue of the definitions, the finger will never point at the United States government or the United States dollar. We can't be currency. As defined, we can't be currency manipulators. And I look at it, and it becomes an illustration of government acting in a way that's kind of childish, purely political. It's like calling somebody a doo-doo head. What does it mean if it does? If the same criteria doesn't apply to everyone, what does it mean if some people are expressly exempted from some of these definitions? So it was just interesting to me to see them working these definitions, taking advantage of public ignorance, and empowering the government to say, oh, a current, look over there, a currency manipulator. A currency manipulator over there, under the bed, behind the desk. We're surrounded by, there's a currency manipulator in the wood pile. This is fundamentally intended just to stir people up and say, oh my God, there's currency manipulators. Eh, for God's sake. Except for us. We don't manipulate currency because we have defined it in a way that does not include us. This is more of the kind of fraud that's perpetrated against people. Again, we talked about it throughout the program. We have lost a certain moral foundation. Maybe we never had it, but at least it seemed like we did. And we certainly are not bashful about structuring our laws and our political statements in a way that deceive people. And that's what they're intended to do. They're not trying to clarify things where you can understand better. They're trying to bamboozle us and take advantage of our ignorance. And it's an attitude among our politicians and leaders that has to be stopped. Or it should be, ideally. They need to tell us the truth. It needs to be a habit, not an occasional, not if they're forced to do it, but they need to be tell us the truth habitually, and maybe we could work our way out of the problems we have. We're out of time for today. Thank you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.